This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! In the left field, December 3000, a run is scored!
Smith courts one into right down the line. It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's edition of Bow Ties and Bullshit, brought to you by our friends at Two Birds on a Bat, which, can I be friends with myself? Because I technically am both. I don't. Kyle, that's a great answer, a great question for you. Can I be both? Can I be myself and friend of the show?
I am definitely a fan of being a friend to yourself.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try that. So, but anyway, happy to be with all you guys from the Patio Studios, the original party place for St. Louis Cardinal baseball, and of course brought to you, as always, by our good friends at InnovativeCompanies.com. Residential, commercial, industrial, doesn't matter. Randy Green's got you covered. He's an experienced craftsman over 35 years. Very interested in earning your business, not getting your business, actually earning it. And I tell you, folks, the day you meet Randy Green and get him involved in your project, it's going to be one of the best days of your life, because I promise you, whether it's construction, heating and cooling, electrical work, or plumbing work, Randy Green's got you covered. InnovativeCompanies.com. Well, my friend, I come up with an interesting topic for today's show. I was looking around. I was perusing. Is that a good word, perusing?
Great, great word.
You like that? I was perusing Twitter, and I saw some different things, and it hit me that we make so many assumptions, both good and bad, that I wonder sometimes if it clouds our judgment, because then we become passionate about our takes. And it doesn't matter if you're just an everyday fan that has no voice. It doesn't matter if you're a bullshit fan like me. I won't say you. I'll say me. And you have made yourself a platform. You know, I like to make fun of our podcasting platform. As some people think it means we think we're something. It doesn't mean anything. It's an avenue. Anybody can do it, right? So I just wonder if sometimes we take it personal, and then you almost dig your boots in. I know I've done it. Like, I've stuck to my guns on things. And so it just made me start wondering, like, if you were to really think about it, and if you really care about the Cardinals and you love the Cardinals, there's three things, if you really look at it from my point of view, that are interesting to me when it comes to the assumptions we make. But they're true. Like, the questions are true. I don't know that the answers, if we ever know them beforehand, but I got to thinking about it, and I thought, who's the one Cardinal that, and I was kind of saying it to myself, once again, I'm being friends with myself, who's the one Cardinal that I believe in that most don't? And then I thought, then it led to, yeah, but who am I really concerned about that nobody seems to be concerned about? And then who's the one guy that has to produce? So they're all loaded questions. And I'm going to address right off the bat, and you knew this, I think you knew this, I knew this, I think we all knew that a lot of people would look at it and go, well, Dexter Fowler is the logical answer to all three of these, which I think is realistic to some degree, but I'm not quite sure that it is, because I think the situation being what it is, I would be shocked if things didn't work out with Dexter, that he get. I don't think the rope's real long with him. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, hey, the rope wasn't long with him with the prior manager, and he got roasted. So is the rope not long with the new manager, and that's a good thing? I don't know. So I don't, you know, that's why I'm not as concerned about Dexter Fowler as I am other things, because I don't think he's a guy that we have to count on. I think if it doesn't work out, he's out and we move on.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he's not the answer to the question, either of the three questions you're about to ask for me.
Well, let's start on these questions. And I'll give my answers as we do together. I'm going to ask you first, who is the one Cardinal that you believe in that most don't?
I don't know if I'm taking the easy way out here or not, but for me, it's Colton Wong. I remember early on in the year when people were talking about maybe including him in a Paul Goldschmidt deal. I believe that Colton Wong is a Ray Durham-esque player, and I don't know how old the audience is, but Ray Durham was a hitter that would hit like 280, get on base 360. He'd have an OPS of right around 800, and he'd play a really, really great second base. And what we saw after June 1st for Colton Wong when he was healthy was a hitter who tracked along those numbers, and he's shown signs of that throughout his career. And, you know, the question with Colton Wong becomes the physical toll that he puts his body through playing the field, diving around, making acrobatic play after acrobatic play. It will that continue to hurt him and compromise his 162-game season and turn it into a 100-game season or 110 or whatever it's been these last couple of years? You know, that's the question. But I believe that that's the kind of hitter that Colton Wong can be. And it seemed like, you know, just like with the roster in general, you know, as Mr. Matheny's tenure ended and Mr. Schilt's tenure began, he was one of those players that really, really thrived in that situation. So he's the one guy to me. And I don't know if people, like, really don't doubt, believe him, but I just know from the amount of people that were so ready to trade him, it seems like he is one of those players that maybe people don't believe in that I do believe has a chance to maybe even slot into that two-hole that people are worried about and potentially be a really interesting and dynamic spot in the roster at that spot. So Colton Wong is my answer.
That's an interesting one. I don't really have Colton on any of my three, which I think is surprising because he's such a one-way-or-the-other type player. My issue with Colton Wong is this, and I like your comparison to Ray Durham. I was a Ray Durham fan. And when you said that, my immediate thought was, I immediately went to, I don't think Ray Durham struck out near as much as Colton Wong. And if you go look at their stats, Colton Wong strikes out as much as Ray Durham did, and Ray Durham had 200 and something more at bats. See, the issue is, and it's funny, I had Coach Funkhauser from Edwardsville, who's a really good coach in here, and we talked a couple years ago, and we talked then about, you know, everybody and their brother at the time wanted Colton Wong to bat in the top of the order. And he even said, he said, listen, as a coach, you can't have a guy like that that takes bad at bats and strikes out too much at the top of the order. You just can't have it. Okay. You just can't have it. That's going to be my concern. It's going to be my concern when I bring up a guy later on that I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag, but the strikeouts at the top of the order is the one thing that we got to try to avoid. Now, if you want to strike out hitting third and fourth and you're going to hit 35 home runs and drive in 100-something runs, that's okay. But if you're going to hit – I'm going to be quite frank with you. If you're going to hit 260 or 270 and you're going to play great defense, you better not strike out much and you better get on base. That's my thing.
Yes. You know. It all comes down to the OBP for me because he does have the potential to have like an on-base percentage of 360 or 370. Like, he's shown that potential over, you know, like a three-month span and on multiple different occasions. It's just a matter of if he can put it together. And you're right. The strikeouts, especially at the top of the lineup with Matt Carpenter, are a huge issue.
Yeah, and so that's kind of where I'm at on this. So I can see it. Like, you know, where you're taking it to, and I think so, is that you're believing in him to the point where you think he could be the answer. And I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I like your answer because it sounds to me, and I'm even willing to kind of feel you here, like as far as like I get it, you're taking this to another level because you're saying, I'm going to believe in him because I think everybody's talking about who's going to bat second or third. If Colton Wong can bat second and can get on base and cut down the strikeouts, that would be a big, big bonus for us. So I agree with you. I think I would like to see Colton Wong become more of an offensive, consistent player because obviously his defense is great. But I even said on this show the other day, the problem is that most people, everybody wants to talk about how great he is defensively. That's great, and yes, he makes a great play every, you know, it seemed like he was making them once a week last year. But with the shift, lots of teams give up defense at second base for offense. I mean, they do. Yeah. I brought up the Milwaukee Brewers putting Travis Shaw at second base. They just do because the shift, the range isn't necessary when you play the shift. So he's not like a, like I'm with him. I'm the same way. I'm like, you know what? They'll figure that one out. The one Cardinal that I believe in that most don't, is probably going to surprise a few people, because I just find it odd that so many people like are doubters here. Like it's kind of got me going, what is going on here? And that's Marcell Ozuna. And people are like, what do you mean? Marcell Ozuna, it just seems like he didn't have an awful year last year, but everybody acts like he did. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I he wasn't awful. Now, I will say this. I don't know, like, if it was the first year, new team. I can't. I mean, I'll lean on Benji, because he's been a player. He's been in the dugout. He's in the locker room. He knows Marcell very well. And I could see it as a man, like, watching the game. I mean, this guy, like, was like, every time he'd come up, especially, I don't know if you remember this, but early in the year, he came up in some spots and didn't come through. And you could tell. It was like, oh, my God. I told somebody the other day, if he would have come through half, like, even a third of the time at the beginning of the year with all the opportunities he had, he would have had 100 RBIs. So,
yeah.
But for me, like, if I was going to believe in one guy that everybody seems to be going, I don't know what we got here. I don't know what we got here. It's Marcell Ozuna. I think we're going to see – second year, I think we're going to see that 28 homers. I think we're going to see that 100 RBIs. I think we're going to see that, you know, 285, 290. That's what I think we're going to see. Now, a lot of people are going to go, well, that's an easy way out, Jim, because I don't necessarily not believe in him. Well, I can tell you this. I don't know then where everybody was at that all year long has been going, Marcell Ozuna wasn't that bad, because I never see it. All I ever see is he underperformed. Which, hey, if you want to put the parameters at 30 home runs, 290, 100 RBIs, then yes, he did underperform. But I really believe in him, and I think he's going to make the next offseason really tough for us, because he strikes me as that guy that's going to come out this year, have a really big year, and then you're going to have to decide, do I really want to give this guy 7 years and $200 million?
Yeah, that's a really interesting take, and I agree with you. And what people lose track of with Marcell Ozuna is just how good he was. You nailed it. From May 1st on, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I did a Twitter thing about it, but he was terrible in April. And then from May 1st on, his numbers looked more like they did in 2017 than they did in, you know, the prior 4 years that led up to his 2017 year where he busted out.
Yeah.
And we also saw how good that Marcell Ozuna can be when he's healthy after he went on the DL. You know, he came back in September, and he was one of like two guys who actually hit the baseball in September. You know, the Cardinals go 12-15. And, you know, the pitching falters, the hitting falters, but Marcell Ozuna is hitting well because he got a DL spin and he's finally healthy. So I love that answer. It comes down to how he recovers in the outfield from having that shoulder surgery, and hopefully that cleanup thing does it. But I love that answer a lot, and I think that you're on solid ground with it too.
Well, and, you know, you brought up the injury thing, right? And that falls into the assumption stuff, right? Like, we're always trying to assume things. So, anyway, that was kind of my thought on it. I like yours as well. Let's move on to the next question. One Cardinal that you're concerned about that most aren't?
You know, before you say things sometimes, you know you're going to get blown up for it.
Oh, I'm going to get blown up for mine, I know.
Mine is Harrison Bader. I love Harrison Bader. He's enthusiastic. You know, I've often compared him, for the Blues hockey fans, to TJ Oshie, right? He plays with that edge. He's a little fiery. He struts around a little bit. If he was on a hockey rink, you know, he'd check. He'd put people into the boards. He's a full energy, full effort guy. But, you know, I've never been a fan of his swing. And last year, he really couldn't seem to decide what to do. And he's always had strikeout problems, like, you know, pretty intense. Well, he's always had strikeout problems in the minor leagues. He's always had an issue where he, if he gets behind an account, he's done. And that was in the minor leagues too. And even like, if you're in the minor leagues, you usually have a chance to get yourself out of that issue. Like, even if you're down, you know, 0-1, 0-2 on account, the pitching isn't major league pitching, so you have a chance to like bust out of it. And guys do that, and you don't see them, like, when they finally make it to the majors, that's the first time you actually see him struggle that way. Well, Harrison Bader did that a lot in the minors, and he even did that in like the minor league stints that he's had since being in the majors. So Harrison Bader is like my one concern. I think he's going to play a fine center field, although it's worth noting that last year after he went to Colorado in that big outfield, and even Washington, where he had to adjust his positioning and come in a little bit. His defense started to trail off a little bit after his like positioning changed. It had to change for the ballpark. I think he's a great defensive center fielder, and maybe you can get away with stashing him in the eighth spot or the eighth spot or the seventh spot, I guess. But I think that he's going to be a very, very interesting topic among Cardinal fans because people love him, and there's a chance that his production won't be there to match the love that they have for them, which circles back to the first part of this where you say, sometimes we stick by our guns. Like, I have a feeling that we might have a battle on our hands with Harrison Bader as the season goes on. I'm anxious to see what Jeff Albert can do with him. I think he needs a complete swing overhaul. And maybe Jeff Albert's enough to push him over, but we'll see. He's like the one guy for me because, what do the Cardinals have behind him? They have Tyler O'Neill, who I love playing center field, but I don't love him playing center field. I love him in a corner outfield. And then beyond that, Randy Arozarena, Jose Adolis Garcia, Lane Thomas. Like, Lane Thomas is a good defensive center fielder, but he's not like what you need in center. So it's not just about Harrison Bader here. It's about what center field means, getting that offensive production throughout the entire lineup. That's where I'm at. I'm just going to ramble on and on, so I'm going to stop right there.
Well, yeah, it's a good one. I'm not to rebut, but I like the back and forth. My thoughts on Harrison Bader are, the thing with Harrison Bader is this: he is so good defensively in center field, and he can do so many things with his speed. If he can find a way to, let's face it, when you're asking a guy to bat eighth, or seventh or whatever, what you're asking for down there is to take good at-bats. When the situation presents itself, to take a team approach, a good at-bat, you're going to naturally, with your athleticism, like Colt Wong will, even if he's not who you want him to be offensively, they're going to have their moments, right? But what you want him to do is consistently take good at-bats and try to cut down a strikeout, try to do things, blah, blah, blah. The thing about him, just like Colt Wong, is they both play such great defense that you feel like you can give up some offense, right? Well, I just brought it up. The problem is everybody wants to compare Harrison Bader's defense in center field to Colton Wong's at second base. I couldn't disagree more. And I just explained to everybody why. Yeah, is it awesome to have a great defensive second baseman? Sure it is. But I promise you, okay, with playing the shift, if you had to tell me you can pick one, you can have a great defensive center fielder or a great defensive second baseman, I'm going to take the great defensive center fielder every time. Every time, because of the shift. That's number one.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Go on, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say, not that I don't like to have it. Don't get me wrong. Anytime you can have great defense that can stay in the lineup, that's great. The problem on this team is, how many of those guys can you have? And when you have uncertainty in right field, again, you can't sit here and tell me for sure what you're going to get out of Colton Wong. You definitely can't tell me for sure what you're going to get out of Harrison Bader. Most of the other guys, you feel like you can tell me what you think you're going to get. That brings me to my guy, who this is where I'm going to get roasted. The one guy that I am majorly concerned about that most aren't is Paul DeJong.
Yeah.
And you'll have to help me here, but it blows me away how many people have this guy penciled. Oh, he's going to hit 30 homers, Jim. And he plays great defense at short. What do you want? And I'm like, man. It's not like hitting 30 homers in the big leagues grows on trees. And I understand that he had a nice little stretch between the minor leagues and when he came up and the ball was really. But I got to tell you, from a baseball guy, way, way too many strikeouts on good pitches. I don't mean pitcher pitches. I mean way too many strikeouts on 94, 95 belt high. That concerns me. See, that's the eye test to me. It's like Grichik and Piscotty when they can't lay off the slider. That bothers me. It bothers me when a guy that's supposed to hit 30 home runs can't catch up to 94, 95 at the belt. That bothers me. So let's face it, if we're going to be any good, that guy fits in somewhere to finish out the lineup. I see people penciling him in at 3, which I can't believe. And then... if you wanted to bat him 5th or 6th or whatever, depending on what they want to do with Yachty, my point is that guy pencils in somewhere. It's different than Colton Wong, Harrison Bader. Yep, you guys play your defense. Go bat seventh and eighth. Give us what you can. You know what I mean? He worries me the most. But at the same time, I wouldn't bet against him, but he worries me.
I do like where you're at there. I'm a Paul DeJong honk. When they drafted him, I was all over that. Like I love that move. I loved when they moved him to short. I love the amazing strides he's made at shortstop in just 2 years. I am impressed with that.
He still doesn't move like a shortstop. But you know what that tells me? He's one of these guys that like I always talk about. Like it was in a movie, and I don't remember the exact quote, but it's the whole thing of. You know, he's the kind of guy that you could drop him off in the middle of the Antarctica in a pair of boxer shorts, and he'd show up on your doorstep with a suntan and $1 million smile in the middle of nowhere. He's one of these guys that can just, hey, look, man, I'll just get it done. I will get it done. No, you know what? I may not look like Carlos Correa or Francisco Lindor doing it, but I'm gonna get it done. And that's why I'm impressed with him defensively. Like, you know, he still doesn't move like a shortstop to me, and I want that warm, fuzzy feeling, you know. But if he can get it done and he can cut down on the strikeouts, then we got something. But the strikeout thing really worries me. It'd be different if he was struggling with the slider. It'd be different if he was, you know, doing this or doing that. But, man, I don't know about you, but it's what I noticed. Way, way, way too many strikeouts on hittable pitches.
Yeah, and, you know, it changed, especially, you know, it didn't seem like early on, and again, this is me making injury excuses in this particular instance, but it didn't seem like it was that way early on in the year, and then when he broke his hand, he came back, and he seemed compromised to me, and I could very much be reading into that, and you're right, it seemed like the second half of the year in particular, he was missing on that, like you said, belt high 94 on a, you know, a 3-2 count, or a 2-1, you know, 2-1 count, missing on back-to-back, like, belt high fastballs, and that is a definite concern. And you always worry about a hand issue. I mean, they linger. It's a disaster. I think one thing about Paul DeJong, whenever you hear him interviewed, is he says over and over again that he knows that his contribution to the lineup is power. And I like that he knows that and he understands that, and he doesn't try to like augment that. You know, I think about Stephen Piscotty, who is another one of those guys that you could drop him off on the North or South Pole. And 2 days later, he's at your apartment in, you know, in the Hamptons or something. It's completely bright and shiny. And all.
Oh, you know what it was? It was you could drop him off in the middle of Antarctica with nothing but boxer shorts and a toothbrush, and he'll show up on your doorstep with a tan and a $1 million smile. It was something like that. Pretty good. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, and that's it. Like that, he's the Stephen Piscotty mold where, you know, Piscotty got himself in trouble. And Piscotty had, family stuff, obviously, but he got himself in trouble because he made it to the majors and was great for the second half of his rookie year. And then he started augmenting his swing. He started outthinking his ability to hit. He changed his swing for more athleticism, and that didn't work. And then he tried to change it for more power, and that didn't work. And now he's finally gone back to what he was doing in the minors, and he had a really, really great year with the Oakland A's. So what I like about DeJong is that he's not going to change his swing. He's going to keep doing it. But you're right. That's a huge issue. And if he's still missing on that, then it goes back to like my issue with Harrison Bader, where the Cardinals really don't have another like option at shortstop, and that makes DeJong extremely important and extremely valuable. And he needs to keep like you said, he doesn't move like a shortstop. I don't think that there's any debate about that. He needs to continue to maximize his athleticism and his skills to be able to make up for his lack of like fluid motion at short.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. By the way, Buster Olney's reporting that the offer from the White Sox to Machado is 7 years, $175 million. That's $25 million.
Calm down. I know you're going to lose it, aren't you?
I'm going to lose it. But you know what? I'm not going to ruin our show today. I'm not going to ruin our show today. Because if the St. Louis Cardinals aren't in on him at that price and more, like obviously it's like, well, he hasn't accepted that, so it's not his price. If that's the offer he has, I mean, come on. If we're not in those discussions, shame on them. Okay. Back to today's show because I don't want to ruin the show by being upset. Okay. All right. All great answers, I think. Now, this is the interesting one. Who has to produce for us to be contenders this year?
Oh, God. You know, my initial answer, what I was planning on saying when I was thinking about it.
You're
going to
take the easy way out and clump in the bullpen, weren't you?
I was going to say Alex Reyes.
Oh, that's interesting.
But here's my thing is, I don't want to put that kind of pressure on him, even from like a podcast or a fan standpoint. I want him to be a nice shiny object that comes along, and if it comes along, we get to take advantage of it. What I will say is, I think Carlos Martinez is probably the most pivotal pitcher on the staff. The Cardinals are in an interesting situation where they lose so many pitchers after this coming year, and they'll have to redo their entire starting rotation almost. And if Carlos Martinez doesn't perform, especially in like a starter role, where I think even with Michaelis and even with maybe a healthy Waka and even with Flaherty, like the Cardinals are a better team when he is as good as he's capable of being. And I just imagine, like, if you don't have him once every 5 days, then that completely changes how good you can be. And, you know, you go back, and it was something I was looking at. I've looked at a bunch. Like, when he was the stopper in the bullpen, the Cardinals really, really did very, very well. And they moved him to a closer role, and they struggled to get the game to him in the closer role. So to me, since I'm not going to use Alex Reyes, although I do think Alex Reyes, whatever role he ends up being, could end up being a difference maker for the Cardinals, you know, winning the Central or going to the playoffs or any of that stuff. I just don't want to put that kind of pressure on him. I don't want to. He just hasn't proven it yet, so it's hard to say that. I will say that Carlos Martinez and his, you know, evolution from last year, whether it be evolution from injury prep standpoint or whatever you want to say, I think if Carlos Martinez is healthy and pitching like he's pitched in the past and like he did for, you know, all of April except for the first – well, that was in March, so never mind. But all of April and May before he had the injury – where he had like 1.62 ERA when striking out everyone, like that's Carlos Martinez. That's what he's capable of when he's healthy, you know. And then for the first half, he had like a 3.39 ERA. He's some pitcher in between those two, like he's shown in the past. Then that changes the Cardinals, in my opinion. So to me, it's Carlos Martinez.
That's interesting. I got to tell you, I looked at all that. A logical answer to what always should worry you is the bullpen, right? Because it's been an issue.
Yeah.
And if the bottom line is, what we found from championship teams is they have bullpens, right? Not only do they have bullpens, they have bullpens, and then those bullpens seem to be dominant in the playoffs. You know what I mean? It's like whichever bullpen holds, like a lot of times these teams were great through the year and had these great bullpens, and they get in the playoffs, and a couple guys blow it that you didn't see blow it all. You know, that's typically what you see, right? I stayed away from the pitching. I'm gonna put out the disclaimer of why I stayed away from all the pitching. The reason I stayed away from all the pitching is because they have so much of it. And it just seems to me like when you have that much pitching, if some pitching falters or you have an injury, when you have it in-house like that, and it's not that it's necessarily, I wouldn't say that it's proven, but it's not unproven either. We've had some guys that got put in the fire, and I think we're more prepared to suffer. We're more prepared to deal with, you know, this guy, like when Luke Weaver didn't work out last year, right? We were able to insert Jack Flaherty. Well, that's awesome. Or Adam Wainwright or whatever. Jack Flaherty came in. And then you started bringing in the other guys, and they seemed to do well. So that's why I stayed away from them. Bullpen, same way. There are so many guys down there, and people are like, well, who do you think the 7 or 8 guys are going to be? I'm like, it's not 7 or 8 guys. We're talking about 12 guys. Because they're going to have guys up and down, up and down, up and down. You got to be 12 deep in the bullpen anymore. So for me, and this is going to be interesting, okay, and I think this is a logical answer. I think all you got to do is look at it. The one guy that has to produce for us to be contenders this year, and I'll explain my answer because everybody's going to go, what? Is Matt Carpenter.
Yeah.
It's pretty basic, folks. It's pretty basic. Okay, I've had this conversation with my friend Benji Molina and everybody, and I'm like, look, everybody thinks he hit for like a month last year. That's not true. He hit really unbelievable for a month. He was really good for 2 months. He was good for 1 month, but the problem was he was awful, and I mean abysmal, for 2 months. Those 2 months just happened to be the first month and the last month. And look at those months, what they did to us as a playoff team. The other thing, I know people don't like him in the leadoff role, but you cannot argue the fact that in the leadoff spot, his numbers are off the charts over his career. You can't argue. Like, you want to talk about a prototypical leadoff hitter, go grab him. Go look at him. Go pull, like all these people that love numbers, right? Go grab your prototypical leadoff hitter and compare his numbers to Matt Carpenter's. And what are you going to find, Kyle?
You're going to find that there's a lot of extra power and a good amount of on-base percentage, but a lot of strikeout.
Right. So I get all that. So my point is, it's, you know, I hate to, I mean, this is going to sound like, oh, but that whole you go, we go thing that the Cubs had with Dexter Fowler, that really applies to Matt Carpenter. Now, I say all this with assumptions, right? Like, let me tell you something. If you were going to make an assumption about a couple of players, you would have to assume that you feel really good about making assumptions about what Paul Goldschmidt's going to do. Do you not? I mean, listen, nothing's guaranteed, but come on, folks. We traded for a guy that you can almost book it.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't had that since Pujols.
Yeah, I agree. You can almost count on it for sure.
That doesn't mean he won't go through a slump. It doesn't mean he won't start slow. It doesn't mean he won't. It doesn't mean that. This is a game of you take all the information, you make educated decisions, right? And you do that based off past performance and what you think is going to happen based off where they're at. I don't know how you feel more comfortable about betting on a guy than you do Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, if you want to bet on Mike Trout or Mookie Betts, I get all that, right? But God darn it, I mean, Paul Goldschmidt's in that conversation. He has to be.
Yeah, I like your answer a lot. I don't really have much to like go on top of it. Honestly, I love your answer. I think that's a really good point, and we have last year as the template to prove that, you know, as Matt Carpenter goes, so do the St. Louis Cardinals. So I like your answer. I like your answer better than mine.
Well, listen, here's the thing about Carlos Martinez. Somebody just sent something out, you know, and I answered, and they're like, oh, you know, once again, we're back on the fucking hair. I'm sorry to use the F word. We're back on the hair thing, and that drives me crazy. And I want to tell everybody all the time, I don't care what his hair looks like. What I care is, and I don't want to hear your bullshit about, oh, well, if he was somebody else, you wouldn't talk about his maturity level. I will talk about it. Because here's the deal. I'll talk about his. I'll talk about a white pitcher. I'll talk about a Japanese pitcher. It doesn't matter to me what you're. The bottom line is, can you – then this is it for pitchers, folks. Chris Carpenter was, like, the king of this, and if you talk to him about it, it's a fact. He would talk about it out loud. There are days you go out there and you don't have your pitches. But you can't sit there and get frustrated and upset and make bad – you got to figure it out, and you got to figure out a way to win. That's what a winner is, right?
Yeah.
When it comes to stuff and ability, you would be hard-pressed – to list 10 pitchers in baseball that have better stuff and more ability than Carlos Martinez. Can you name 10 that have better stuff and more ability than Carlos Martinez? You can't. But what you can do is you can name 10 that go out and get it done. And if you watch him enough, even on nights where, well, you know, his best pitch is a slider. Well, he doesn't have it tonight, but he found a way, right? His best pitch is that running fast. Oh, but he found a way. And we know who those guys are, right? So that's my point about Carlos Martinez. It ain't got nothing to do with his hair. People want to say, well, maybe should be more concerned. It's like, listen, you say whatever you want, and I don't care what people say. I'm talking about reality. And when it comes to being an ace, and listen, if he wants to be a 4 or 5 pitcher, okay. Great. The problem is we're talking about a guy that should be in a Cy Young discussion, and that's why the stakes are higher for him. It's that simple.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I get defensive about it because, you know, because of the hair nonsense. It's such a – I'm just going to be very – it's a joke. All of it's a joke, and it just goes to show you that we as a fandom is crazy. It's crazy. It's out of its mind. Being a fan is just being out of your mind, and it's all crazy. And you nailed, like, the core issue there. So,
you know, for me, listen, people can be – what they want to be, right? Like they can say whatever, you know, they can do whatever, right? They can say, you know, hey, listen, you know, I did this and I did that and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, there was I'm going to quote this and I'm going to mess it up because I can't remember. I'm just tried Googling it and I can't find it. I'm in a hurry, but I'm going to tell you this. I was in Whitey Herzog, when I worked at AB, would come up to the suite all the time and hang out. And great guy. You know how he tells a story. And if you've ever been around Whitey Herzog, he loves to tell a story, and he strings it out. And his answer to that always is, well, if I answer all your questions before you ask them, then you can't, then I'm done. So that's why his answers are always long-winded. And it's in his book, and he tells this story that that Don Sutton, when he went to play for Whitey Herzog, he said, hey, are you going to give me a nickname? And he said, what do you mean? And I can't remember if it was Cassavetes Hunter or Goose Gossage. It might have been Gossage. And he said, well, evidently, after you gave him his nickname, he went on to be great or whatever. And he goes, well, I don't know what to call you. And he says, you can call me Don Pussyface Sutton if it means I get into the Hall of Fame. My point on that is, I don't care what your hair looks like. I don't care what color you are. I don't care your sexuality. I don't care about any of that. Just go get it done on the field. That's all I care about. Now, that's me personally. And I know, unfortunately, we live in a world where people don't think that way. But, you know, sometimes you got to tune out that noise. But to blindly say that Carlos Martinez doesn't struggle with his emotions on the mound is a dumb statement. Because every player that played the game knows it and recognizes it, and even he does.
Yeah.
You know, is Pedro Martinez an idiot?
I don't think so.
And he brings it up every time he talks about him. And he knows him, and he's talked to him about it. Okay? So it's not wrong.
Like you said, he gets frustrated when he doesn't have it.
That's
right. He gets so frustrated, and you can see it.
Well, because as a fan, don't you watch a guy that's that electric that can run it up to 100 as a starter with a nasty off-speed pitch and a slider, and you wonder, how's he getting hit?
Yeah.
Don't you? I mean, seriously. So if we're frustrated, imagine if you're the guy throwing it and you're like, God, man, how are they knocking me around today? Well, I just don't have it, right? So that's it. Hey, great answers, man. This was fun. I love this sort of stuff. I'm excited about the other guys' answers, and I'm going to get over to those guys now. Kyle, enjoyed the conversation today.
As always, Jim.
I got to tell you, by next Wednesday, it sure looks to me like we may have to get off a ledge over this Manny Machado or Bryce Harper thing. So we shall see where this one goes for sure. Kyle, tell everybody where they can follow you.
You can follow me on Twitter at KYLER416. I write for Birds on the Black. We have our Dirty 35 coming out. That'll start coming out on February 12th, which is when pitchers and catchers report. That's my 35 top prospects in the Cardinals organization. We'll unveil them one at a time. And I do Prospects After Dark every Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Central Time. You can find us on Periscope or through Twitter. Really easy to get to. And if anyone is near Jim right now and that ends up being a done deal with Machado, just keep an eye on him. Just somebody make sure that you're there to support him. I'm really just concerned for your well-being, Jim.
My well-being. Well, listen, let me tell you about my well-being. Okay. And, it was Catfish Hunter. It was Jim Catfish Hunter, the whole thing. And, there's an interesting thing in here. It's all really good stuff. I can tell you, I enjoyed Whitey Herzog back in the day. It was good stuff, really good stuff. Yeah. Hey, listen, thanks for doing the show. I appreciate it greatly, and I will talk to you. I don't know if I'll see you Monday at Winter Warm-Up. If you're going to be around, I don't know if you're working or if you're off, but we're still working on a location for our show and with Benji, so maybe I'll give you a shout if you're around.
I'd love that. Yeah, I'll let you know.
All right, brother, take care of yourself.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, that's Kyle Reese. Time to move on to our next participant in here. He's always got a different angle and a different look on this thing, and I love it. Let's welcome in Mo's Algorithm. What do you say, Mo?
Hey, Jim. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm interested to hear your takes on this. Kyle and I just had an interesting conversation. I'll give you my answers after you give me yours. I won't go into the description unless you want to ask me about it, but the fans have already heard my take, so they're going to want to hear yours. And I do want to remind everybody that Mo's Algorithm is brought to you by our good friends at Gators Baseball Academy. Gators Baseball Academy. .com. You can learn more about their four-pillar system. It's training time, guys. Off-season, academies are up and running. If you're an infielder, outfielder, catcher, pitcher, hitter, they got all their labs going. If you want to find out if you've got what it takes to play for a Gator team, they can help you there as well. But that's GatorsBaseballAcademy.com, home of the Missouri Gators, the Illinois Gators, and now the Prep Academy. That's GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Well, Mo, great questions today. Kyle and I just had a great conversation about it. I think the answers were interesting, and I'm interested to hear yours. You ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go.
One Cardinal you believe in that most don't.
I'm going to go ahead on this one and say Paul DeJong.
I think he's
going to have a very good year. I think he was on track to have a very good year last year until he broke that bone in his hand.
Okay.
And then that, you know, that hamate bone breaking, saps power from guys for a while until they get fully healed and get some rest. And I think he's going to really prove, he's always going to be what he is in terms of striking out and stuff like that. But I think he is going to be a very good piece in the middle of that lineup behind Ozuna and Goldschmidt.
All right. Good stuff. My pick was Marcell Ozuna, and that was only because I think people really felt like he's like just not worth it. And, you know, I went into great detail about, you know, an average year from him wasn't awful, and I would expect more from him this year. So we'll see what happens. But I like your take. Interesting, though. You know what's interesting about your take, and you're gonna love this, is it leads right into the next question, and that is, who are you concerned about that most aren't? So I'm going to go first on this one because it's the answer to the previous question. The Cardinal that I was concerned about that most aren't is Paul DeJong, and he was the one that you believe in that most don't. I find that odd that you think most people don't believe in him, because personally, that's all I see, is everybody just assumes he's going to hit 30 home runs and he's going to play just a notch below a gold glove shortstop and everything's going to be fine. They're going to bat him third. I'm struggling with just inserting him in the three spot, and he's going to hit 30 home runs. But I also said that I think he's a guy that figures out a way to get it done. So it isn't that I think he's awful. It's just that I'm just not ready to say he's a 30 home run shortstop that plays just a notch below gold glove defense consistently.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't go that far yet. I think he's still in the early stages of his major league development, and that injury hindered some of that. But I think I would never plug him in the three spot with the lineup that they have. I think he should bat fifth or sixth behind Ozuna and Goldschmidt, somewhere in that area. But I think I think a lot of him like David Freese, in that it took David Freese a few years to get where he was to become a really plus player. And I think that's where Paul DeJong's headed, and I think the trajectory is pointing upward. And I think some people, there are pockets of people that are down on his power a little bit. And I think that was because of the second half last year when he was dealing with coming back from that broken bone in his hands.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because, you know, for me, as I look at it, I want to say we're set there, no issues. Here's the thing. Is it for me, and here, I'll let you answer the question for me, is my issue here the fact that the Cardinals are in need of something and they may try to force that square peg into the round hole? And what I mean by that is I still don't know if the Cardinals know or anybody knows how they're going to run the lineup. I see people that want Goldschmidt to bat second, which I do not. I understand the reasoning why people want him to do it, but I would prefer him to hit third. But the problem is who hits second? And then people say, well, then you hit Goldschmidt second because of the OBP, because of the average, because of everything. And then you go ahead and bat DeJong third, and I'm like, a lot of strikeouts third and fourth there. So I just – it's almost like, to your point, I guess maybe I wouldn't be near as concerned if I knew he was going to bat fifth or sixth all year, but I just have this feeling that he's going to find himself in the two or three hole, and I'm just not sure he's that type of guy. Now – As I always say, I hope he proves me wrong, and maybe it won't even come to that. But I think that's my biggest concern.
I think the Cardinals have chosen to make their bed in terms of right field. They're going to have to lay in it,
yeah,
and they're going to have to put Dexter Fowler in the two hole until he proves that he's no longer a major league caliber starter. You know, they've made this choice. This is the direction they're headed. Their faith is behind Dexter Fowler. So until he proves he is no longer capable of being in the lineup every day, he needs to be in the two hole because that's what you paid him to do.
Yeah.
Or you paid him to lead off. But Matt Carpenter has proven that he's the better option at that particular position. So it's Dexter Fowler for me in the two hole.
Well, interesting.
And then you've got Goldschmidt third, Ozuna fourth, pick between Young and Yachty for fifth and sixth, and you go from there.
Well, I agree with you. I think, because here's the deal, and I had mentioned this earlier when we Colton Wong came up because he was the guy that Kyle believes in that most don't, and we talked a little bit about it, and his concern player was Harrison Bader, and I said, isn't that really the issue at the end of the day? If Dexter Fowler can't bat second, that means he bats sixth, seventh, or eighth. So can you imagine your 6th, 7th, or 8th being Colton Wong, Dexter Fowler, Harrison Bader? I mean, that's not – I mean, I know people are going, what do you mean? Harrison Bader did – you know, and Colton Wong can do – and I'm like, listen, if you wind up with three guys that just – I think offensively you wouldn't bet – you wouldn't bet your last $1,000 on either of the three offensively. Isn't that the issue at the end of the day?
Yeah, and then you get to add a pitcher on top of that, so you got like 2 innings worth of outs there.
So, you know, that's the thing. That's kind of what I brought up about the Harrison Bader, the Colton Wong. You can only have so many of them guys in your lineup, so then you got to start figuring out where do I start making changes at to try to add offense in. See, and that's the – and people say, well, I thought we were going to make a commitment to defense. See, that's the rub. How do you figure it out? And my thing with Dexter is, again, you're not even putting a guy out there that's great defensively. So I'm not as worried about him, and I didn't use him as an answer for this. I know everybody thought he could be the answer for all three of them, but I just didn't use him because I maybe I'm crazy, but, you know, it's funny. I said this before. The old manager got in trouble when he ran him out there for a couple of months, 2 or 3 months, and he wasn't hit and moved him. All of a sudden, the old manager was an asshole, right? And now I'm sitting here saying, well, the new manager who's supposedly committed to him, will he really run him out there for 250 at bats and let him hit 220? Will he?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't use him as any of my answers either, just because it's such a question mark that I really didn't even consider him for the most part. So,
yeah, it was for me. I was sitting here going, I just can't believe a team that has all these one-year answers would live with 2 or 3 months of a guy struggling just because. Now, if they do, let me tell you something. I've always said, if I could have one beer with Mike Matheny, it wouldn't be, why'd you bring in Waka? It wouldn't be, why'd you do this? It would be, who had the naked picture? Whose wife did Brandon Moss have naked pictures of? Okay? And I can promise you this. If Dexter Fowler doesn't perform and stays in the lineup, that'll be my question for Mike Schilt. But I have a feeling if Dexter Fowler stays in the lineup and doesn't perform, it's probably going to be a question for Mo, not Mike Schilt. That's my opinion. Who knows?
Sure.
We'll find out. Okay, last question. Which Cardinal has to produce? Now, this is a loaded question because, you know, you're talking about a 25-man roster. You're talking about eight guys playing, a starting pitching staff, a relief pitching staff. But who's the one guy that has to produce for us to be contenders this year?
Matt Carpenter.
You and I think alike. That's who I said.
Because they have no depth at the top of their lineup. We just talked about who their two-hole hitter is. They have no option. They have nothing to turn to in the system or anywhere. Their chips are in the middle of the table on their leadoff hitter in a 33-year-old Matt Carpenter, hoping that he doesn't fall off the face of the earth. You're hoping. You can project all you want to, and I appreciate projections. You know I do, and he is projected to have a good season. But at some point, Father Time comes knocking, and if that happens this year, this team is in trouble.
Wow. Yeah. You know what's funny is that was my answer. I used more of a just, you know, really just honest approach of look at last year. I mean, we didn't make the playoffs last year because of two abysmal months offensively that revolved around Matt Carpenter. Awful in April, right? March, April. And then he was awful in September. And, you know, we were in a playoff spot in September. We were in. Remember? And just fell apart. And I said this too. And you're a numbers guy. All the people that don't like him in the leadoff spot, especially if you're a number, go look at the great leadoff hitters in baseball and go look at their numbers. And what are you going to find when you compare him to Matt Carpenter's? I know you don't like him there because – it's the same reason I don't like Paul DeJong at short, though. He doesn't look like a shortstop. He doesn't move like a shortstop. His arm angle, sure. Nothing, his feet, nothing he does looks like Francisco Lindor, Carlos Correa. You can go up and down the lineup of all the guys that have played shortstop since they come out of the womb, right? Okay? But he gets it done, whether I like it or not, right? And
So did Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah. So my point
is, I think he looks a lot like him.
I'm not sure about that. I get the body type and all that kind of thing, but man, Troy Tulowitzki was a little better, I think, before all the – well, I mean, he's been hurt his whole life, though, too. That's another thing. There's a guy, for Pete's sake. That, you know, it's funny. I was talking about guys that just have found a way to get it done their whole life, and then there's just certain guys that find a way to get hurt, too. Isn't that amazing? Matt Carpenter, I mean, and it's like, well, man, that's – well, no kidding. It's like, well, not no kidding. You know, not no kidding. I mean, you know, these are all bets, right? Like, the team is betting on players to perform based on all the information they have, right? Whether it be analytics or the eye test, right? And you feel like even Carpenter, though, see, that's the thing. Like, me and Benji Molina have conversations about this because, you know, I want to say, you know, look at those final numbers and they're awfully good. But the problem was that's why it's hard to do that, because if you looked at them and said, well, Matt Carpenter ain't the reason why we didn't make the playoffs. Well, I can tell you this. I don't blame anything on one guy, but I can promise you this. Okay? This would be a hard thing. Like, maybe you could. I don't know. Because this is a tough one because of how the whole numbers affect the outcome of games and then the people around them and all this. But I have a hard time believing. Okay? I have a hard time believing. The Cardinals were close to a playoff spot last year, okay? If I could pick one thing, and I know we talk about the bullpen, but I think the Cardinals make the playoffs last year if Matt Carpenter doesn't hit 145 in March and April and doesn't hit 170 in September. And it's not only the 170, okay, and the 145. It was the 309 OBP. And it was the 313 OBP compared to like 400, 392, 400. That's a big deal when you're the leadoff hitter. So that's why, to me, and listen, I'm not saying we didn't have bullpen problems. I'm not saying we didn't have other problems. I'm just saying that that's your guy. That's your leadoff hitter. That's the guy that plays every day. So that's why that was the answer for me. So we're kind of thinking alike there. I don't know if I'll say great minds think alike, but you know what? I will say it. Great minds think alike.
Yeah, you know, and I was close to saying Molina simply for the same reason, that there's just not – he's another potential candidate for Father Time to hit at any moment. And if it happens, the Cardinals have no – you can talk about Andrew Kisner all you want. That's fine. But they have nothing. And we saw that last year when Yadi unfortunately got hurt, something that is not a Father Time injury. But
right.
You never know when that's going to happen. He's 36 now, and the Cardinals are just they're playing with fire with some of these positions that they don't have a lot of depth in.
You know, and that's the thing. You know, like Yadi, like listen, okay, yeah, we all know how old he is, right? We get it. There have been other players that have played well into older age. I understand that the majority do not. I get that, but. But I also understand that it's hard to sit here and go, well, you know, well I can tell you right now, Father Time's never going to catch up to Yadi. That's a dumb statement, right? Like, we know that. Father Time is undefeated. But it does affect everybody else different. And everybody talks about how good Yadi takes care of himself. Everybody talks about his and I've seen it with my own eyes. So I get it. I understand that, right? But so does a lot of guys. Yeah. I mean, do you think guys that get hurt and they don't bust their ass and they do. Everybody's different. You know, it's the comparison I make all the time about, like, you know, if you and I buy a car and it's made on the same assembly line, yours came off first, mine came off second. We both drive our car for 5 years and put 100,000 miles on it, and we meet and I say, how was yours? And you're like, I had problems all the time. And I'm like, huh, funny, I never had a problem.
Yep.
There's, you know, there's probably some luck involved. There's just sheer unluck. There's a variety of reasons why. But I don't care. The bottom line is this guy's done a good job for us and continues to do a good job for us. And until Father Time does catch up with him, I'm not going to bet against him. And that's what it really comes down to at the end of the day for me.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. You know, my biggest concern is insurance. And they just don't have a lot of insurance at the catcher position. They don't have any insurance at the leadoff position. A lot of their insurance they have in places that are guys are young, you know. If Bader goes down, you know, with an injury in spring training, well, you know, Tyler O'Neill's probably going to play in center field every day for the most part. You know, I don't really consider Ozuna old. I don't think you need a whole lot of insurance. But again, they have O'Neill as insurance for really any of those spots, and he can hit in any of the spots that those guys hit in. You know, they just a lot of areas that they need insurance in, they don't really have a lot of it, and it's concerning.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to look at that. I think we. You know, when you want to look at a team like the Yankees or something like that, you can go, holy cow, look at – but, man, most teams are kind of in that boat. But I also understand that this is our boat and this is all we really care about, and the expectations are high. I mean, if you have this same conversation with somebody in Pittsburgh or most other cities, it's like, yeah, these are our guys, go get them. And we're – because of the situation being what it is, we're already contemplating, well, what do we do if? What's the answer if? And it's like – We're not gonna be able to do that. We're just gonna have to go play. So, good stuff, man. I enjoyed this today. I love questions like this because I love to hear other people's thoughts. I know you always have a little bit of a number approach behind yours. You know, interesting stuff. Where can our listeners follow you?
On Facebook at Moe's Algorithm and on Twitter at MOZ_Algorithm.
Well, good stuff, my man. I appreciate it. I don't know if you saw the Manny Machado stuff today, but if the St. Louis Cardinals allow him to sign somewhere for 7 years and under $200 million, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, I
don't ever tell me again about your payroll muscle. I mean, this guy's getting ready to sign a contract for less than Jason Hayward. Now, people can say, well, he hasn't signed it yet, Jim. Yeah, that's their offer. They know he's not going to. They're pulling a Cardinals. They're making an offer to say we made an offer, and they know he's not going to sign it. Well, where's his other offers? Now, he may sign with Philly for $8 and $250. And if but I'm saying if he does that, we're stupid. So, whatever. It's not $350. It's not 10 years. That's where we're at with this. And if the St. Louis Cardinals aren't involved, I'm pissed off. And that's going to be the conversation next week, I promise you.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is they don't care.
Well,
like, they don't care what we think. They don't care if we're mad. They will get their $3.4 million and they'll get their TV ratings regardless. And that's where I'm at on that.
I have a feeling we're going to have something to talk about next Wednesday. I don't know why. I just have a feeling one of these guys, at least, if not both of them, are going to sign this week in the next 7 days. That's my opinion. We'll find out, though. All right, my man. I'll talk to you next week.
See you, Jim.
All right. Great stuff as always. And of course, that's our man, Moe's Algorithm. A staple here on Bow Ties and Bullshit, where analytics meet the eye test. Let's welcome in everybody's favorite writer, my good friend and yours, Brendan Schaefer. What do you say, Brendan?
Good afternoon. How you doing today, Jim?
Really good. I want to remind everybody this segment of the show with Brendan Schaefer is brought to you by our good friends at Adam's Smokehouse. I had tweeted out and had some people with some licking their chops yesterday over Adam's Smokehouse, located over on Watson Road. Had the opportunity to have lunch with Mike, the owner. Tremendous people. I had the tri-tip sandwich last night. Oh, my God, it was so good. Oh, I didn't have the bread, but unbelievable. They brought me out samples of different things, as they always do, and gave me an opportunity. But that's Adam's Smokehouse on Watson Road. Want to remind everybody, their business continues to grow. They're open till Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. They're open till 7 o'clock. They used to close a little earlier. Now they're open to give you an opportunity for dinner. They have the delivery zip codes that are available. And, of course, I saw a lot of box lunches going out of there when I had gotten there. So, you know, if you're in the office, if you have a corporate event or anything that they may be able to help you with there. And, of course, catering. But, guys, their barbecue's tremendous. The atmosphere is awesome. And it's second to none, in my opinion, and just great people all the way around. That's Adam's Smokehouse, located on Watson Road. Check them out. Find out for yourself just how good the barbecue is. And remember, for all of our fans listening from out of town, if you're coming in for winter warm-up, I had sent this out, and you start thinking, where am I going to go? Look up Adam's Smokehouse and get over there. When you get there, make sure you tell them you're a Cardinal fan. Tell them you heard about them on Birds on the Bat. Tell them where you're from, because they have a map that they're putting pins from where everybody's come and visited them from all over the country. It's an amazing thing. They're getting ready to put the Puerto Rico one all the way on the bottom with a picture of Benji eating his ribs. So it's an awesome thing. You guys get in there and enjoy it. Brendan, my man, we've had some fun today so far on this question, and I'm really, really interested to hear your takes. You know, I know all you guys look at the game a little bit differently. So let's just get right into it, and I'm going to ask you the first question. One Cardinal you believe in that most don't?
Okay, so I actually found this to be the most difficult one to answer, kind of because it's hard to figure who people are believing in and aren't believing in. And maybe you'll be able to tell me from what's already taken place. A guy, and if this doesn't count, I'll give you another name, but a guy that I'm real high on and like kind of having to talk myself off the ledge of an, you know, top five, top 10 MVP voting caliber season is Marcell Ozuna. And the tweet I sent out this morning, I just asked what people thought, because then I'd be able to gauge whether this would be a hot take or not. 57% said he'd be slightly better. Sorry, I got something in my throat there. Goodness. Okay. Said he'd be slightly better in 2019 than he was in 2018. 33% said he'd have a monster year. That's kind of where I'm at, is that he'll have a monster year. So I don't know how hot of a take that is, but let me know what you think about that name and if that's too on the radar. Because with the shoulder situation being cleared up, I expect big things from him.
Well, let me tell you this. I'm going to give you an alert here, okay? Brendan, you and I have been friends now for, you know, we've always went back and forth a little bit on Twitter, but we've really known each other for a few months here. So I have no idea, like, before we knew each other, what you thought of me or our show, okay? You may have saw for years tweets or things that I said on the show and thought, that Jim's a dumbass, okay? I cannot believe that that's his opinion. But I'm going to tell you, if you go back and listen to these bow ties and bullshit, you and I are in lockstep on a lot of stuff. So that may be either a good thing or a bad thing for you. I want you to know. Because that was my answer.
We've been trying to figure that out for months. We can't seem to get on a different page.
Marcell Ozuna was my answer. And it was for the same reason you were. Because I don't think he was awful last year. I definitely don't think he was as good as he could be. But I think people think he was awful. Now,
well, for me, he was disappointing, but I think a lot of that had to do with expectations.
Sure, absolutely. Now, it's funny, it's amazing how much you just said it. I think the biggest problem for the Cardinals is, I think he had the year he had last year, which I'm not going to say was great, but it wasn't awful. But I think this guy's going to come out this year, I'm not going to give you a straight number, but I'm like, he's going to hit, let's just say the over and under is 27 home runs. I think he's going to.
I'm pounding the over on that.
Okay, but I'm going to go with 100 RBIs, and I think he's going to hit 280 to 290, and then then the Cardinals are going to have to go, what do we do here? Do we give this guy 7 years, $200 million? Or whatever the price. I know how prices have changed in baseball, but my point is, I think he's going to put them in a tough spot where they're like, who is he? We're not sure who this guy is. He reminds me of his Jason Worth a little bit. I think. You're not sure who he is. Like, which guy is this? Like, and then you give him a whole bunch of money, and it's like sometimes he's. I think that might be who he is in the end, and he has a ton of potential, just like they all do. But man, I think when you're starting to look at how do we pay him and what do we really like, what can we count on? That's my take on it, and that's amazing that you and I are in lockstep on that.
I think this is going to get a lot of attention in the coming year as. Ozuna enters that free agency final season and people will see how he performs and question whether the Cardinals should bring him back or not. I'm fully in the camp of, and I don't anticipate changing from this over the next 9 or 10 months. And if I'm wrong, I don't see any way he's back with the Cardinals in 2020. I think he'll test the market if he has a really good season and he'll go somewhere else. And if he has a bad season, the Cardinals won't have any reason to want to bring him back. So I it'll get a lot of play, but for me, I just think it's a one final year in St. Louis, and we'll see what happens with the outfield beyond that. But I do agree with you on the season I think he's going to have. 30 home runs would not surprise me. Runs batted in are kind of contingent upon, you know, what others do in the lineup. So I don't want to say 100, but I would say 30, 95. But for me, you're going to see more runs scored. He only had 69 runs scored last season. The batting average of 280 last year was, I'm not expecting anything more than that because I don't really care much about the average. What I want to see is the on-base and the slugging go up. I think both will. And he could approach 900 as far as an OPS, and that wouldn't stun me. More likely, he'll be in the upper 800s and have a really good year. And I think that'll be important for the Cardinals to having some success.
Hey, I want to tell you, I'm really proud of myself, too, because I started reaching for things like, okay, who am I going to – like. That situation with Marcell Ozuna, I started thinking, okay, what's a similar situation? And I started like just in my head right away, like, okay, who? And I threw out Jason Worth because of his situation. And I just looked it up. I'm telling you, if you look at Jason Worth's stats, and then when he got the big deal from Washington, that's what Marcelo Ozuna screams to me. Like, I think that's the position he puts the Cardinals in. Do we do this or not? Because I don't think, like, you would be a fool. Like, I know that he had some decent seasons in Washington. He even had some MVP votes way down on the list. But never, like, I don't think Jason Worth was ever in Washington what they hoped he was going to be when they signed him to that contract. And it was all based off, you know, a couple of really good seasons in Philadelphia, and then he just happened to hit free agency at the right time. So that's who it reminds me of. And I think, you know, to answer the question, just like you, that's my answer. I think he's the one that I'm not worried about, that I think a lot of people are worried about. And to your point, I think it's the main point. I think the expectations were really, really high last year. But we'll see. I'm with you on that. I think it's good. Next question. One Cardinal you are concerned about that most aren't.
And again, we can talk about, it's hard to gauge that public opinion. But for me, a guy that I'm like, my concern has never been higher for Carlos Martinez coming into this season. Because to me, Carlos Martinez, the closer or the excellent reliever, is not good enough. That's not what the Cardinals are paying him to be. And so that was interesting at the end of last year. The numbers were good. He was a solid closer, whatever. But that's not what I'm looking for out of Carlos Martinez. I'm looking for solid number two starter in the rotation at a minimum out of Carlos Martinez. I'm looking for the innings that go along with that. And I, you know, that stability is something the Cardinals starting rotation is going to need this year, because as of yet, I know Dallas Keuchel's still sitting out there, but they haven't added to the rotation in a meaningful way because they're kind of counting on looking at the guys they're going to get back. You remember in September, 3/5 of their rotation was guys that maybe you're not really counting on. I'll even throw Wainwright in that. He'll probably be your number five or one of your five going into the season if he's healthy. But you look at the names in that rotation. Otherwise, it was just Michaelis and Flaherty that you're excited about going into this season being part of that rotation. And so the guys like Martinez and Waka's another one with the injury stuff, but I have more expectation than I do or in Martinez than I do in Waka. Martinez has got to be one of the top pitchers in this rotation for this team. I don't know if it's an injury thing or what it's going to be that could potentially hold him back, but it's kind of one of those things that after a weird year like last year, it's almost like I don't really care what the reasoning was. I just can't have that happen again.
Yeah, that's a good point. We talked a little bit about that with the other guys. I stayed away from pitchers only because they have so many of them. And I think they're in a win-now mode. I think you'll see things move. Like a Michael Waka. I mean, like, you can't say Michael Waka without injury. Like, you know, I love everybody. I get it. I get the whole, you know, hopefully we have an injury. Like, I'm done saying that about Michael Waka. It's almost like other guy. Like, listen, he's going to get hurt. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, you just got to see what you get out of him.
Sure.
And you're not. And that's kind of why I did pick a pitcher, because I feel like he's your highest ceiling guy that you're most worried about. Like, it seems like Flaherty and Michaelis, barring like a weird injury or something, those guys are going to be pretty darn solid, and you know what you're going to get out of them. And Flaherty might not have even hit his ceiling yet. He could be better than he's even showed. But with the way the pitching rotation looks, there's too many of those names, like Alex Reyes. Yeah, he's great if you get something from him, but will you? Same with Waka. And so because there's so many of those question marks, you know, Wainwright, what's he going to bring you? And how long are they going to run him out if it's not working? For me, that's why Martinez is such a key, because he's got the potential to be that number one starter, but, man, the variance in potential outcomes is pretty wide as well.
Yeah, for me, like I said, I'm with you there. I just stayed away. Like, again, I only stayed away from the pitching because they have so much of it, and it's like that could go a thousand different ways. So I just stayed away from pitching because, to me, some of it all seemed like it was on the field. My guy was Paul DeJong, mainly because it just – and I've said it already through the other two, so I won't bore everybody. I'll just give you the gist. I just – you know, it's hard for me to just say, yeah, he's going to hit 30 home runs and play – you know, just a slightly below Gold Glove shortstop. Yeah, just go do it. I raised my concerns earlier about the strikeouts and things like that, but I also hope and believe that here's a guy that really works hard, and I'm sure he's working on the parts of his game that he would or anybody would consider deficient. You know, Carlos Martinez is a polarizing figure for me because, there's guys like Matt Carpenter, Carlos Martinez, you know, certain guys that are hot topics in the when I say media, I mean social media. They're hot topics because they're guys that perform at a very high level when things are going well. And then when they don't, the haters want to come out because there's just something about them they don't like. Now, we talked about the hair and all that earlier. I don't care about all that stuff, right? For me, it's, you mentioned it earlier, the number one word in this whole thing is expectations. Carlos Martinez is apt, like people will say, well, you can't, why do you treat him different? I do treat him different. You know why? Because he's better. So I do treat him different. If Carlos Martinez was a fourth or fifth starter, I wouldn't give a shit. And it ain't about his hair either. I wouldn't care about the fact that the guy pitches well for a good portion of the time, but there's just some nights he can't keep it together. And
you know, I was never super anti Jaime Garcia for that main reason, because I didn't, you know, and he had really good stuff, don't get me wrong. But like, he didn't do it consistently enough. We've seen enough from Martinez to be able to expect more.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. Here's a guy, I say this all the time. And again, your word, expectations. We're not talking about a guy that's a good pitcher for us, or even our best pitcher. We're talking about a guy that has the stuff, that has the ability to be in the Cy Young conversation every year. And we're not seeing that. And I think that's the issue.
Yeah, I agree with you. And go ahead and ask me that next question, and I'll have an interesting explanation as to why I went with a pitcher for answer number two. But for number three, we might once again be in a little bit of a lockstep.
Well, this one will be interesting. One that has to produce for us to be contenders this year.
So I guess you've seen this news this morning about the highest offer for Manny Machado as of yet is $175 million.
I'm going to tell you now, I've already promised, because it came out while we were recording, while I was talking to Kyle.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I've already promised that I'm not going to take this show off the rails, because I've given the thing, and I'll tell you, I've given this proclamation. If he signs, now I know he hasn't signed that offer, so I'm not going to say, well, once it, if he signs for 8 years and 240 or 8 years and 220, and it's not with the St. Louis Cardinals, shame on them. Don't ever tell me about payroll muscle again. Don't ever talk to me about anything again. The years are less and the money's less than what everybody, like drastically less. Let me tell you something. 8 years, you're taking off the last 2 years, which are, if you're talking about a 10-year contract, the last 2 years are really the only ones you're going, I don't know. So you're taking off those 2 years, and we're not talking about $350 or $400 million, and you just offered Jason Hayward supposedly $200 million for 8 years, they can kiss my ass if Manny Machado's in another uniform for that amount of money. And I don't give a shit about what happened at first base, and I don't give a shit about his dumb comment about not hustling. Go watch tape of the guy. He hustles all the time, okay? And I don't care if you don't like him. That guy is a player, and he's a damn good player for 8 years and $200 million, I promise you.
That was epic.
See, I went off the rails. I said I wasn't going to do it.
You did it. But here's why I brought it up, though, because this question specifically is, which guy needs to succeed for the Cardinals to succeed as a team? Who's a key linchpin? And for me, the answer to that has got to be Paul DeJong, because you look at what the alternatives are. They could have this guy, this Manny Machado, come in, and you can take some pressure off the rest of the players a little bit. This is a superstar player. And the reason I said DeJong, as far as looking for them to succeed rather than DeJong as a guy I'm worried about, I think we kind of feel similarly about him. But because Carlos Martinez has other pitchers that could kind of fill in for him, I didn't go that direction with this question. I chose to say I'm worried about him. For DeJong, I look at what happens if he doesn't perform, or if he gets injured, you know, if there's a gaping hole at shortstop. That's where I think the Cardinals get into a bit of a bind, because that's not really a position of depth for this roster. I could have gone the Dexter Fowler direction, but you look at right field, Jose Martinez could slide in, Tyler O'Neill. I think they could be okay. It doesn't have to be perfect. Shortstop, though, if Paul DeJong does not succeed, and we've got enough reason to say, hey, why do we treat it like a guarantee? I like Paul DeJong, but is it a guarantee? I don't think so, and if he doesn't succeed, that's where I think the Cardinals could run into some trouble, and it's especially interesting to have that question be answered today when we're seeing how available Manny Machado really is at a potentially affordable price. I'd stick Matt Carpenter in right field for a season before I would just poo-poo 7-175 for Machado. I mean, I don't care about where you're going to put him for 2019, because there's like a bunch of guys that could potentially leave. You know, Carpenter could be gone. Goldschmidt could be gone. You know, you figure it out for a year if that is the cost to bring in a superstar player.
I was going to ask you about that. So let me ask you this, because I promised we wouldn't go off the rails, which I did for 30 seconds. I apologize, because my feeling is this will be a topic next week. I think this thing is coming to a head. So I think we're going to have a real topic next week. That's my prediction. By next Wednesday, at least one of these two big dogs is signed and we can bitch about it not being us. So where I'm going with this is, so my guy was Matt Carpenter, and very simply, if Matt Carpenter's Matt Carpenter in the leadoff spot and doesn't have an abysmal 2 months, this team's in the playoffs last year. Last year they are. They're definitely better this year. Okay? I'm not saying, you know, so even it out a little bit. I mean, I know he had an ungodly month. He had two really good months. He had one good month and two abysmal months. Let's eliminate the two abysmal. I'll give up the great month, and let's just be that way. And I think if that happens, I think the Cardinals are in the playoffs, because I'm confident in the other pieces. Now, that being said, to your point, I'm going to ask you this question. If the Cardinals, like, let's just say they are the mystery team, right? Let's have some fun here before we go. They're the mystery team, okay? They're the mystery team. All of a sudden, Bill DeWitt and John Mozeliak give everybody in Cardinal Nation, everybody in Cardinal Nation's got to eat crow now, because they announce at the winter warm-up that Manny Machado is signed. But to do it, see, if they signed Manny Machado, the first thing that would go through your head, my head, and everybody's head is, oh, that Colton Wong's out, because they're going to move Carpenter to second, and Machado's going to play third, right? Like, right away, we know Wong's fucked, right? We know that. But what if, let me ask you this question, what if Machado signed here under the agreement that he plays shortstop? Would you still do it? And now it's DeJong at third, Machado at short, and Carpenter at second for just this year, and then they figure it out next year. Would you agree to that?
If we're still talking about like a $200 million price range, because nobody has exceeded that, I'd say sign him. You know, even if he's told he's got to play shortstop, which I think would be dumb. I think what you say is, hey, look, I don't know what Chicago White Sox are saying to you, but you know, if they're going to give you 175, we'll give you 225, but we just want to play you at third base, or have the ability to play you at third base. You know, it might be a little bit of both, because the Cardinals would have flexibility there. You know, Goldschmidt is going to be your first baseman, but Carpenter would see some second, would see some third, I'd find somebody to put in right field. I know that is like a dumb thing, because defensively it would be an absolute mess, but I only think about that for a moment before I think about what the lineup would be. So I would just say, yeah, I mean, sure, do it. That probably means Carpenter walks after 2019. They probably don't pick up his option in that scenario, which there's no guarantees. But and then you would be either putting Machado at shortstop if he looks better, or begging him to just play third while DeJong plays shortstop, and you figure out the rest later. But this is a guy that does not come out in free agency at this age, and we've said it all offseason. It doesn't happen, and so – if this is the price range we're talking about, yeah, I love Colton Wong more than anyone, or as much as anyone, but you're going to find ways to get that guy into the lineup if he's affordable at this rate. I just would think it would be a no-brainer.
See, I'm with you on that. This thing's interesting to me. Boy, wouldn't it be interesting if the Cardinals were laying in the weeds? You know, it's happened to them. They've had teams lay in the weeds on them. You know, the Angels laid in the weeds on Pujols, right? Boston kind of Boston's the one that swooped in and gave Price extra money at the end to sign there instead. They've had it happen to them. But wouldn't it be interesting if we were laying in the weeds? Can you imagine being John Mozeliak just now? And listen, to think he doesn't know, that's crazy. Like, he knows. You got to answer a question for me, because I couldn't find it. I think a few years ago, I heard an interview with somebody when they were talking about collusion, and I am almost sure that when that came out where somebody had talked about offers that were being made, and I want to say it was when Pujols was a free agent, because I followed it so closely, and I want to say one of the agents said, Well, no, that's bullshit. All you got to do is check with so-and-so, because when you make formal offers, they're registered. That way teams can't say they did that. You know what I mean? So,
oh, gosh, I don't even know about that.
I got to find somebody in that. You know what? I know an agent for the Beverly Hills Sports Council that's been on some of my other shows before for other things. So I'm going to give him a call. But I think there's somewhere that way when it's all over with, they have a way to say, no, look, this is what was going on. Because they were talking about guys like Boris that play teams against one another. It was either Pujols or Holiday when that thing was going on. And I want to say somebody goes, look, it's real simple. All you got to do is go back and look. And you know, it's a way to keep everybody honest, I guess. So I'm real curious about that. But it was interesting at the time. But my thing here is this. Maybe the Cardinals are the ones laying in the weeds. Maybe they're sitting there. Can you imagine me and John Mozeliak today going, man, it was one thing to sell to our fans that, look, we're not going to give anybody $300 million. We're not going to give them. But God darn it. We just a year ago offered to trade for a guy and give him at least $250. We tried to sign a guy that's been awful since he left here, $200 million. Thank God we didn't sign him. We almost offered Dave Price $200 million. And here's a guy that plays every day. He's a great defensive third baseman. He's the number three hitter or number four hitter that you've been lacking. What's there to not like? He's an iconic player. Right? Your fan base is going to go crazy, right? Why not? So they got to be sitting here today going, man. Like, I have a hard time believing that tweet right there isn't going to get a couple of teams interested in Manny Machado. And maybe that's what it was designed to do. If you're the Yankees, don't you call? If you're the Dodgers, don't you call and go, man, I could always put Justin Turner at first base.
You find ways to make room for a guy like this at that price. That's sure. The way I view it. We'll see. Like, I don't think there's any way the Cardinals are getting involved, but I think it's a no-brainer to consider the options. You know, to see what's out there. To match that offer. Say, hey, I don't know if you want to be on the second fiddle team in Chicago, you know, everybody up there, big Cubs, but hey, we'll offer you the same thing the White Sox are offering you to come to St. Louis if you want.
I agree.
Like, gosh, that, at a minimum, I would think that would make sense. I just don't expect it.
I agree.
Based on what the Cardinals have been about, that would just be trying to fit too many square pegs into round holes on the defensive side, even though I can turn around and say, my opinion, that's only 1 year. You figure it out and it's worthwhile. But I just don't see it happening. But it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I was stunned to see 175 as the White Sox offer. I figured maybe $200 million. But again, if nobody else jumps in, why bid against yourself? So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, it reminds me a little bit of the the Matt Holliday thing when the Cardinals were signing Matt Holliday. It was like everybody was worried. I kept going, who are we bidding against? I don't hear any other team. It's us. Like, we're negotiating with ourselves. And to this point, I mean, if you're Philadelphia and you've had these failures and you haven't gotten really one guy you really wanted this offseason, I mean, Andrew McCutcheon's a nice player, but come on. I mean, how are you not, like, maybe this is why the tweet came out about the Phillies. Maybe this is why the Phillies said, we're going to have them both. Because the best offers on the table for these guys are 7-8 years, $175, $200 million. And the Phillies are going to go, you know what? We'll give you both $200 million. Let's do an NBA thing. If both of you agree, we'll give you both 8 years, $200 million. Let's build a team here. Who knows?
Man, that would be fun. That would be, as a baseball fan, that would be fun to see just what that team might look like.
Can you imagine?
If they did that. And now remember last week we talked and I said Machado was my pick if I had to guess for White Sox, and I guessed Dodgers for Harper. Now I'm almost thinking that White Sox isn't going to be where Machado goes, because somebody's got to beat that offer, right? I don't know. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. But now the Phillies are definitely sounding more serious suitors for at least one of these guys.
Gee,
and that's kind of where I was at the beginning of the offseason. At least it's kind of heating up that we can talk about some what we consider to be concrete facts as a 7-year, $175 million offer has been revealed. So, I don't know.
Interesting.
It's wild.
Interesting. Well, hey, listen, man, I enjoyed the conversation today. I hope everybody liked our answers. And, again, it's just all perspective, all speculation, all assumption. I think we all have expectations. We all like players, certain players more than others. And that, listen, that goes into our fuel for our fire, right? Like, we're going to stand our ground on a guy that we like, no matter how many numbers you show us, no matter how much you tell me. If I like the guy, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If for some reason I don't like the guy, there's not a whole lot you're going to tell me that's going to change my mind, even though I might be willing to listen. So we all like players. We all have different hopes. We all have different expectations. And that's what makes this fun, and that's why I'm enjoying the show with you guys. Brendan, where can our listeners follow you at?
It's at BSchaefer12 on Twitter and at KMOV.com, as well as the Baseball STL app.
Well, hey, listen, man, I appreciate you. I'm enjoying these conversations. Like I said, I would be shocked. Like, I hope I'm not here next week going, well, I was wrong. We don't have anything to talk about, because I got a feeling we're going to have something to talk about next Wednesday.
I think you're right. I think it could be an interesting week for sure.
All right, Mike. Yeah, you coming in town for warm-up?
I will not be in town for warm-up. I am expected to, it's not finalized yet, but I'm hopeful that I will be covering some spring training this year for the first time, though. So that would be exciting if I'm able to get down there and do that.
Well, now that would be cool. That's we've been talking a little bit about that ourselves here, trying to figure out if we want to do something like that. So, hey, listen, I enjoy
it. Might end up being there for a couple of weeks. So if so, we'll have a few Wednesdays that we should be able to.
Yeah, that would be interesting
to
for sure.
Commiserate
for
yeah.
sure. Well, hey, listen, man, I appreciate you. I look forward to our conversations, and I'll see you next week.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, that's Brendan Schaefer. You've heard from all the guys today. Again, want to thank Adam Smokehouse for bringing that segment of the show. Watson Road, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, open till 7. Don't forget, closed on Mondays. Available for carryout, available for delivery in certain zip codes. You can call up there and find out. And, of course, the box lunches for the businesses. They deliver those, I'm telling you. Guys, you're just not going to find better barbecue. I know there's good barbecue places in St. Louis. I'm not dogging on the other ones. But I'm telling you, I've never had a bad meal at Adam Smokehouse. Tremendous stuff. No matter what you get, too. That's the best part of it. No matter what you get, good stuff at Adam Smokehouse. That's going to do it for us this week. I want to thank again one last time the rest of our partners, Randy Green, InnovativeCompanies.com, residential, commercial, industrial, doesn't matter. Randy Green's got you covered. Heating and cooling, electric, plumbing, and, of course, the construction team. 35 years experience, second-generation craftsman. That's Randy Green, InnovativeCompanies.com. Patio Studios, thank you for your continued support. The original party place for St. Louis Cardinal Baseball. To all my friends at lineupmedia.fm, thank you for your continued support. Now home to Yo Radio. Make sure you download that for free on your mobile device. You're going to be able to find some Cardinal and Blue stuff on there real soon. So download that for free, Yo Radio, on your mobile device. Find us at twobirdsonabat.com. Happy to have you guys be a part of us there. You can subscribe to the show there, which is what we're asking everybody to do. Find us on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. If you're a Cardinal fan and you follow us, we're going to follow you back. Facebook's always our big push. Go to Facebook, type in Two Birds on a Bat, find our page. Once you've done that, make sure you've liked it. Click invite your friends, invite all your friends, invite your Cardinal friends, whatever you want to do. That would really help us as we try to get more people involved. And then the pinned post, that'll be the show. You'll be able to see that pinned post. If you haven't done so at any time, make sure you've liked it. Just made a comment on it and shared it, and that really helps us reach more and more Cardinal fans. So thank you for your continued support there. Can't thank the Gators Baseball Academy enough. GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Find out if they've got what it takes to help your son or daughter when it comes to the wonderful game of baseball or softball. Their four-pillar system is second to none, folks. They are now available in Illinois as well as Missouri, and then, of course, they have the academy for all the prep players. They got something special going on over there, folks, and it's wintertime, and this is when you get better. That's GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. Guys, I can't say enough about the Facebook groups that allow us to share in their groups and grow. RallySquirrel.com with Nate McHenry's one does a great job, large following. Mick Light, Arch City Media, awesome. Really appreciate it when he gets involved. Some of the best Facebook groups out there revolve around all of our friends over at Cardinals Nation, Cardinals 24/7, CN 24/7 Network, all the great stuff going on over there. My good friend Chris Lawless, who from the very beginning jumped in and started supporting us and introduced me to some great people over there like Ron and Gino and Larry and all the gang over there that really, at the end of the day, just care about Cardinal baseball. So thank you to all of them, and thank you to all of them for their continued support. And they just keep in trying to grow their content. More and more shows are coming out, whether it be from the writing side or the podcast side with the network versus Cardinals Nation. Again, they do a great job, and I really do appreciate everything they do for us. Linda and Vicky, I am a Cardinal fan. Yes, I am. Fans of Yadier Molina, obviously one of our favorite groups. They do a great job. They do it out of sheer love and passion. Those are great Facebook groups, folks. Check them out. STL Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals Nation, St. Louis Cardinals Crew is one of my favorite. I love that one. That we get a lot of response out of that one. I love the groups where people don't mind getting involved in conversations. And I know we're always going to get passionate, but when we keep it civil, it's awesome, and I love it. Cardinals fans versus Cardinal haters is a good one. There's so many, and again, I just try to highlight new ones that I forget about from time to time. Cardinal Freak's been with us for a long time. And again, folks, they're out there. Have some fun with it and go crazy. To all the Cardinal fans out there, I hope to see you this weekend at Winter Warm-Up. Make sure you guys have a good time. Get over there. It's going to heat up here, folks. I know there's snow in the forecast, but it's going to be warm over in St. Louis. For all everybody here at Two Birds on the Back, let's go Birds!
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.